You know what we should do?
Elope?
I hear the ticking of the clock. I'm lying here, the room's pitch dark. I wonder where you are tonight. No answer on the telephone. And the night goes by so very slow. Oh, I hope that it won't end alone.
Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Ed.
Good afternoon, Josh.
Welcome to the Gleeful Podcast with Josh, Jen, and Ed. Ed, you're right on top of the microphone again. Are you back at school?
Am I really? No, I'm not. I really am not. I was just excited.
Well, we are excited to have you. Welcome back to Gleeful, where we discuss the Fox show Glee. Today, we're going to be taking a look back at episodes 3, 4, and 5, Preggers and the Road's Not Taken. So that should be fun. And we'll take a look back at some of the television shows of years past that have tried to do what Glee has done, combining music and television on a weekly basis. Just a couple of the highlights of past years, most known for their infamy rather than for their success. But we'll take a look back at that. But before we get started, Jennifer, how are we today?
We're fine, thank you.
We're fine.
How are you?
It's a wacky day.
It's 105 outside.
Oh, good. That's nice.
But it doesn't feel that inside, so.
And what's the weather like in Indiana?
It was raining all day, and despite that, day was a pretty awesome.
I miss rain.
Day.
I wish it was raining. God, I wish it was raining.
Well, it's raining yesterday too, so I'm kind of over it. You could have some.
Well, yes. I mean, it's supposed to be 105 all weekend, isn't it? So we're in for it.
But we're going up the coast, so we'll be fine.
Oh, that's good.
Be a lot cooler where we're going.
You're going to your secret bat cave?
We do. We have a bat cave, and we're not allowed to tell you where it is.
It's in a rock island just off the coast, the central coast of California.
There you go.
Well, that's fairly specific. I mean,
hey, you know, we try. So we opened up there with Alone, as performed by Christian Chenoweth and, of course, Matthew Morrison. One of my favorite songs, not one of my favorite songs on the show, but definitely one of my favorite songs ever written. Though I think that they changed the opening. I think the original opening was played on a guitar, and that sounded like a keyboard, but I could be wrong.
You know what? I always thought it was keyboard.
I thought it was keyboard.
It is from their 80s period, Heart's 80s period. So yes. It's very possible that there was some keyboard there. But before we get started with anything else, the promo for the new season of Glee has been released. So let's go ahead and take a listen and see a bit of what they are teasing us with now.
They say we only sing show tunes and 80s pop. Let's show them how down we are.
Not everyone can be a champion. We need fry cooks, bus drivers.
Nationals are in New York this year.
We're family now.
I'd be lying if I said I didn't have feelings for you.
We have to go from a small rebel force to a giant wall of sound.
Shut up!
The Glee season premiere, Tuesday, September 21st on Fox.
Well, Jennifer, on a scale of 1 to 10 goosebumps, 1 being, the last season of Scrubs, and 10 being the first season of Scrubs, how did we do?
For that particular trailer, I would give it an 8.
An 8 on the
goosebump scale.
On the goosebump scale, and Ed, for you, the goosebump scale would probably be 1 being I got nothing.
Season 9 American Idol.
Versus season 4 of American Idol.
10 being season 8 American Idol.
There you go.
I don't know. Right now, I'm at a conservative 7 right now.
Really? That's pretty good.
I don't want to be like, oh, this show is so awesome, guys. It's going to be so amazing. And then it's like disappointing. I still am trying to protect myself so I could still be like, oh my God, this show was so good. Yeah.
That's it. You know, you make a good point. The worry is always that you get too excited, that there's no way the final product can live up. Like the show would run and there's just no way that you could be, you know, it can live up to the expectations you've set for it. I would say for myself, you know, 1 being The Incredibles and 10 being WALL-E, that was probably like a 6. Like, I'd maybe put it on like a Cars scale.
Oh, my.
I don't know. It was still there. I mean, you know, I don't know what it is about that damn Empire State of Mind. As soon as that kicks in, I get all excited. Like, there's something about that song. That is just a damn perfect song.
Oh, yeah.
And the groove on that is fantastic. So as soon as that came in, I was like, oh my God, I'm ready for some Glee.
It's really exciting. I mean, and it's kind of funny that, like, yeah, we're more than show tunes in 80s pop. And like,
yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, the self-aware humor is definitely.
Now that you mention it.
Exactly, exactly. There was, you couldn't hear it, but there was an appearance of Terry in the promo. So we do have some Terry to come. Some great stuff from Sue Sylvester. Right off the bat in the promo, we've got Sue Sylvester saying the world needs fry cooks.
Yes.
So right there.
Well, I mean, oh, and a big congrats to Miss Jane Lynch.
That's
Mrs.
correct.
Mrs. Jane Lynch on her Emmy win this weekend.
Big
congrats. Did you watch the Emmys this weekend, Ed?
No, but I read results.
Did you? Please tell me you at least watched the opening number.
Should I?
Am
I being told that I really should?
Yes, I watched it about 7 times. I thought you would have beat me. Well, okay, the host is Jimmy Fallon. But
yeah.
it starts with this skit where he's getting out of his car and he's got his tux on over his shoulder and he bumps into a couple of the kids from Glee and he's like, hey, you know, congrats on all your Emmy noms.
Mercedes, Kurt, Leah, Rachel, and Finn.
And he said,
and they're in character.
They're in character. And he's like, well, no, they're.
They are themselves.
They're themselves.
But they're acting.
They look like
in
high school
character.
Kids. Yes. So he bumps into them and says, hey, congrats on all your Emmy nominations. Will I see you inside? And they said, no. Tickets are too expensive and, you know, we can't afford it. And then there just happens to be a sign behind them that there's a singing competition and it's for just the amount of like $5 more than they need for tickets. And they said, that's great. We need more people. And then I don't want to spoil it because along the way they pick up some really fun people. And
well, they do.
It reminds me of maybe it was Jimmy Fallon who did the.
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
He did the same thing. Yes,
he did like show. He did like skits, and he did one that was Parks and Recreations. With all the cast was on it.
Yeah,
on the skit. I was like, oh, I love this.
Yeah, he's done another Glee type one where he was trying to raise money on his show staff or his show production to get cue cards or something like that.
So cue cards.
It was just a lot of fun. The whole thing is like 6 minutes long, and it's just.
You can find it online.
John Hamm.
You can find it online. It's pretty fantastic. And yeah, I mean, it's got everybody. I'm just going to ruin it. It's got, I mean, the group ends up being John Hamm. Betty White's in it for a minute, but she's not actually in the group. A totally random note. Jennifer and I went to see a recording of Inside the Actor's Studio the other night with the guest was Betty White.
Oh.
And that was hilarious.
Okay. So, and on the Goosebump scale. 10,000.
So, there you go.
So great.
That was pretty fun. But yeah, John Hamm is in there.
Tina Fey.
Just a whole slew
Hurley
of random
from
people.
Lost, the chick from Vampire Diaries. Kate Gosselin makes an appearance.
But
here
isn't
and there.
They don't let her join in because she can't dance.
It's really funny.
Yeah, it's and everyone does their own singing. Joel McHale does his
Joel
own.
Joel McHale.
Everyone. So it's a surprisingly funny sketch.
Yes.
I mean, it was actually good enough that I didn't really watch the Emmys, but everything I saw after that wasn't able to hold up to this opening sketch. The opening sketch was good enough. So definitely check that out. You can find it on online, and it's a lot of fun.
Oh, and actually, speaking of congrats, one other thing. I read today that Ryan Murphy made Forbes 100 Most Influential People or Powerful People's list. I mean, it might not be Forbes list, but somebody's 100 Powerful People. He's 55.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So congrats.
He looks really good for 55. So in other...
His placement was 55 on the list of 100.
Oh, I thought you said he was 55. Oh, well, then...
55th.
He's done. Well, then I'm sure he looks really good for whatever age he is. In other Emmy wins, we did mention Jane Lynch received Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series for Sue Sylvester. Ryan Murphy got Outstanding Directing for a Comedy Series for the Pilot Director's Cut, specifically the Director's Cut. And then a whole bunch of people won for Outstanding Sound Mixing for a Comedy or Drama Series. Philip W. Palmer, Doug Andham, and Joseph H. Earle, all for the Power of the Madonna episode. So they don't get their names read very often. They deserve it. And then, of course, Outstanding Guest Actor in a Comedy Series, Neil Patrick Harris as Brian Ryan in Dream On. So that's pretty exciting because, you know, Neil Patrick Harris, he deserves it for Barney, but he never gets it. He never wins for Barney. So we talked a little about the Emmys. Let's go ahead and take a look back at some former shows that have attempted to combine music into their drama and for, of course, mixed results. By far the most infamous, and almost the entire excuse I thought for discussing this was so that we could play this song. This is from the television travesty known as Cop Rock. All these songs were recorded by Randy Newman. Cop Rock was a cop show created by Stephen Bochco, and it was essentially, in Stephen Bochco's own words, it was Hill Street Blues, the musical. Here's a bit of a He's Guilty. They were actually nominated for an Emmy for this song.
He's guilty, judge, he's guilty. We have seen through all his lies. The time has come to put this boy away. Well,
as a child,
Sonny, the end is near.
I was confused in every way.
Like you got some hard times coming.
He didn't know right from wrong.
To you, my dear, I want to make it clear.
Guilty.
I want to thank the jury.
So the gospel choir there is the jury. Lead vocals from the judge, and then you can hear all the other counselors and the foreman and everything throughout the song. This is pretty much the way Cop Rock was for all 11 episodes in 1990 before it was canceled. It was a total joke at the time, but they were addressing like hard cop plot lines. Like there was an episode about gang warfare. There was a cop who was killing people to cover up a crime, and there was a whole subplot about a woman selling her child for drugs, and occasionally they would just break out into song. It was not good. Jennifer, did you ever see any of Cop Rock?
No, but I was a big fan of Hill Street Blues. I did watch that, and I remembered that this was coming out, and even as a kid, I thought it was gonna be stupid, so I avoided it at all cost. But you've watched some episodes, right?
Well, of course. I'm a huge dork, so I've seen all the episodes of of Cop Rock. And the music, I mean, it's Randy Newman's music, so the music's not bad, but it's a bit of a mess. And the whole concept just doesn't work.
No. I mean, breaking out into numbers when you're a high school glee club is acceptable, understandable, plausible. But breaking out in song in a courtroom, singing about somebody's guilt is a little cold.
Well, it was hard for them to have any serious moments because occasionally they would break out into song. And they also had the problem where all the songs were original, whereas Glee has the benefit of using songs that you already kind of know and love. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't have to jump that hurdle, whereas Cop Rock was writing new songs each week, some of which were, of course, better than others. Ed, had you even heard of Cop Rock before I mentioned it?
Well, you've mentioned it before, but prior to that, no. My musical breadth of knowledge is apparently not that large.
Well, about the same time, I think even the same year, NBC created a show called Hull High, It was also in 1990. It only lasted 8 episodes before it was canceled. It was set in a Los Angeles high school where students spontaneously broke out into song and dance. Now, again, this is not the Glee format where they broke out into song within the context of the plot. This is more classic musical theater style, and they were really insistent on using hip-hop and R&B in all of the musical numbers. Here's a bit of a clip from Hull High from 1990.
Yeah. For a moment, if you please your attention, here's a few things I'd like to mention about the school. Everyone should know. So listen up close, 'cause we're about to go into the twilight zone, the outer limits. This is the fifth dimension you're in.
First of all, keep your hands on the bus. It's a jungle out there, safety's a must. The neighbors accused, some seem quite unique, but for now it's best to remain in your seat. If you all would look to the left, you might notice over by the gym, a Jarius Modus. And over there, the rarest of all, a Brainius Maximus against the wall. Strange, but it's the place to be. But just don't feed the animals. Staff, excuse me.
I think I saw an episode of Hull High when it was on. For some reason, I've seen all of these that we're going to discuss. I didn't even have to do research on this topic. It was just like musical TV shows. I couldn't find any complete episodes around anymore. It's certainly not on Hulu or anything like that. But
and did you watch this when it was out?
I'm 90% sure I saw it when it was out. But it just never worked because, again, they were trying to do serious episodes or serious topics in a serious tone. It was essentially a soap opera set in high school where characters would break out in song. And, again, where Glee has been able to walk the line between the serious and not. Mm-hmm. A lot of these shows, I think, were trying too hard to be to take things too, you know, credibly.
Mm.
I don't know. You know, so if you go back a little further, then 1990, you have 1984, which brought us, of course, a very young Stacey Ferguson who went on to be called Fergie, and she starred in a show on the Disney Channel called Kids Incorporated. Anybody remember Kids Incorporated? Am I the only one that watched this one, too?
We've been through this, yes. We got something that is new, that is true. We got something just for you today.
How about that fashion, Jennifer?
Yeah.
Kids Incorporated, the whole concept was there were these kids that pretty much lived in a nightclub, and they would perform covers of songs. So within the context of the show, they would find an excuse to... There's Fergie there. they would perform, you know, the whatever were the hot hits of the moment. And it lasted for quite a while, if I remember correctly. Jennifer Love Hewitt was on it. Mario Lopez was a dancer. But Fergie is definitely their biggest name.
Was Mario Lopez, was that before or after Saved by the Bell?
Saved by the Bell. It was before Saved by the Bell.
Oh.
When he was still...
that's 84.
He was just a child when that one... and, you know, the one that I know we've discussed with listeners before is, of course, Fame. Fame lasted for an eternity on television, and went through several casts. But, Fame, you know, they were doing the same thing as Glee, again, trying to create the songs within the context of the plot. But, you know, sometimes it worked better than others. Ed, did you ever see Fame?
No. I'm so terrible. It's bad.
Well, it is well before your time. Fame was my favorite show as a child after I grew out of my Menudo phase, which, as Jennifer knows, was my first word. So anyway, here's a bit of...
I try not to think about it.
Fame's biggest hit outside of the theme song was probably Star Maker. And here's a clip. This is the cheesiest song ever written.
Crazy, no, now we've outgrown.
See, at least a couple of our listeners have to be totally taken back by that song. No? Not you at all?
I didn't watch the TV series.
Oh my god. It was on, so I was wrong. I thought it was on for longer, but it was only on from 82 to 87. It was inspired by the 1980 film, which was directed by a really awesome director, if I remember correctly.
That's still a good run, considering it was a show from a series. A series from a movie.
Yes, definitely. Ed, did we lose you there?
No, I'm here.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry.
It sounded like you fell asleep, dropped something over there.
No, I just, this chair is really squeaky. You want to buy me a new chair?
We'll work on that.
Call me.
Wow. You know, and so the only other, you know, attempt at musicals on television or music infused in a TV show that I could find is, of course, Viva Laughlin. This is the most recent one. It was just a couple years ago. Derek worked on it, for God's sake. It was executive produced by Hugh Jackman. He appeared in the first episode. The show was canceled after two episodes and was actually inspired by a British show that was much more successful called Viva Blackpool with David Morrissey and David Tennant. And the thing about Viva Laughlin is that they actually did songs like Glee, where they would, you know, pick a popular song and they would perform that popular song, except that they actually sang over it. So the real song is playing in the background while they're singing over it. Let me see if I can go forward. There we go. So you can hear that the song is still going and he's just singing the lyrics.
Did you think this fool could never win? Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know why I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time.
That's horrible.
Viva Laughlin didn't work on any level. It didn't work as a show. It didn't work as a musical. It didn't work at all.
His voice is horrible. I've heard better drunk people at karaoke.
Now, Viva Blackpool works a little better. Or it was called Viva Blackpool when it was played on BBC America, but it was just called Blackpool in the UK. It works all right, and maybe some of our foreign listeners can let us know, you know, what their opinions were. It functioned a little better just because the characters kind of worked better and the whole plot fit a little bit, but the whole concept of the characters singing over these songs in, like, reasonably large musical numbers is very odd. And Hugh Jackman did Sympathy for the Devil in the first episode and was supposed to come back, but he never did. So, Jennifer, you can watch these. I have them all.
You know what? If he's in it, I might watch it, but no chance if he's not.
So, you know, with this, like, string, and I'm sure there's ones that I'm forgetting, if any of the listeners can think of anything, definitely let me know, because I'm so fascinated by how many failures there are on television where they tried to have the characters sing.
You know what show I love that had characters singing?
Go on.
S Club 7.
What's that?
There you go. That's a great example. I didn't even think of that one, Ed.
It didn't fail. It lasted for four seasons.
It did.
It was very successful. I loved S Club 7. I have all their CDs.
No, what was the plot of S Club 7? How did the music work in that one?
They were seven kids who got out of high school, and they wanted to, they're all British, so they came to America to break into the music biz. And then they went from, like, Miami to LA to somewhere else, Hollywood. Okay, well, that's far. That's a nice trip. And then, then they went to Spain, and so in the process they were becoming international pop hits for real. I mean, I guess they weren't really ever huge. Their only big hit was "Never Had a Dream Come True," but all their songs are delectably delicious ear candy.
Now, wow. They were the whole plot of the show. I mean, when they did performances, it was just them recording a song.
They were hired to perform.
Gotcha.
So they weren't ever, well, I mean, sometimes the songs correlated to their emotions But most of the time, it was just like they were hired to perform, and they performed, and they had like nice shows. And seven.
And the big hit, yeah, you're right. I remember the big hit was Never Had a Dream Come True. We'll play a little bit of it here. The reason I remember this song is I was in college when this came out, and I remember that this was a big hit on the radio. They played this all the time on the radio. And I was at a party, and this song came on, and this girl who's my age goes, "Man, we used to love this song in high school. This totally takes me back." There's something about this.
Take you back to what?
Well, there's something about this song that sounds like it was recorded in 92 or even earlier. Like, it sounds like an expose song from like the late 80s.
It was released in 2000.
I know. That's why it's so crazy. There's something about this song that sounds like it was recorded 20 years too late. With Ed on backup vocals.
I love SO7.
What were you saying, Jerry?
I was sad when they broke up. Although they're technically still touring, but their S Club period, because they keep losing and gaining members so fast that they don't even bother throwing in a name.
Well, didn't they have S Club Kids for a little while or something like that?
S Club 8 was Hannah's, who was one of the original SO7, her little sister, and like seven other kids. And SO7 Juniors did not do so well. The only thing that I remember from them is One Step Closer, which they also used as the American Juniors' first single. So it's like confusing, blurring the lines. Oh, Lucy Hale.
Well, Jennifer, what were you saying?
Is that an original song, or is that...
I believe it's an original song.
One Step Closer?
I heard that.
Never Had a Dream Come True.
Oh, yeah, that's an original song. It was released November 27th, 2000.
Wow!
There you go. Doesn't it, Jennifer? It totally sounds like it should have been recorded in 88.
Yeah.
As you mentioned that one, there was one that came out when I was a kid, a TV show that used music a lot, that was called The Guys Next Door, and it was essentially The Monkees, but with a boy band. And I guess The Monkees kind of count, but these shows about bands where the bands perform, they kind of feel like cheating because they're less shows as much as they're just really long music videos. Whereas, like, you know, something like Glee is really insistent on it is a TV show that has music to help tell the story, as opposed to The Monkees, where you had this plot that was really just there to support, the songs. Before MTV. We lost Ed for a second, but we are about to get him back. While we reconnect with Ed, let's go ahead and take a look back at episodes 4 and 5. We started, of course, with Prager's. Prager's being one of the, you know, kind of set the stage for pretty much everything that came after it, or all the major plot lines that came after it. And I'm trying to remember, you know, Ed, are you back? Ed is not back.
Come back, Ed.
Come back, Ed.
I miss you.
Let's go ahead and pause here and wait for us to get Ed back. So sorry about that. We are back. We are back with Ed. Welcome back, Ed.
Thanks. I don't even know what to say. Yes. Yes.
Let's go ahead and take a listen to a bit of music from Prager's, episode 4 from season 1. This is Taking Chances, which was written by Cara Diaguardi and performed by Lea Michele, made famous by Celine Dion. Here's a bit of this one. See how I posted that like I'm on the radio? Here's a bit of this.
Yeah, I know, right?
I was a DJ. Don't know much about your world, but don't wanna be alone tonight on this planet they call Earth.
You don't know about my past, and I don't have a future figured out. And maybe this is going too fast, and maybe it's not meant to last. But what do you say to taking chances? What do you say to jumping off the edge? Never knowing if there's solid ground below, or hand to hold, or hell to pay. What do you say?
So Prager's is, of course, the episode where we found out that Quinn was pregnant. And the main takeaway I have from this episode is I didn't believe it.
Why didn't you believe it? What was that to believe?
It was like I spent pretty much the entire episode, even when I watched it again, I found it coming back to me a little bit. I spent the entire episode thinking it was going to be a dream, it was a prank, it was a joke. Like, I did not believe
it. Why would she be so emotionally drained if it was just a joke?
Well, I'm not...
Do you believe it now, after she had the baby?
Yes, finally? I believe it now.
He wasn't present in the delivery room, unless he sees that baby come out.
No, I mean, it's that it seemed totally unexpected, and it seemed like such a major plot line to bring in into the fourth episode. Like, it seems like... I've watched enough television that a giant plot line that's going to span the entire season, like Quinn being pregnant, is going to come up in the first episode. So this, I thought, was really different. I mean, to bring that up in episode four is kind of shocking. I mean, think about it. When you've got a season-long plot line come up, usually you're going to get that out right away. You're going to hit that as early as possible. Season four is a little late, or episode four is a little late.
Yes and no.
I mean, it doesn't seem that out of place. Okay, sorry.
No, go ahead, Dad.
Oh, it doesn't seem that out of place. Because, like, when they needed something to, like, push the season along, because right now it was, like, he was like, in between Rachel and Quinn, and then this, like, slammed the hammer, even though nothing was actually decided. It flipped the script, so to say.
That is true. I totally agree. I'm just a little surprised it came so late.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm not really surprised. I mean, so much was happening the first couple of episodes with different characters and so forth, and this was, I mean, I don't know. It didn't feel out of place to me.
Well, that's good. So, you know, the biggest thing about this episode to me, and Ed mentioned it before we started recording, this episode has very little music. As far as songs that actually ended up on the soundtrack, it actually only has one song that ended up on the soundtrack, this Taking Chances cover. That was the big takeaway I had from this one is, are we only going to get one song per episode? Because that's not quite the glee
that I was expecting. That was a wrong judgment to pass. So soon.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was happily proved wrong, but that's my biggest problem with this episode is there's not a lot of music in it, and most of the music that we hear is that Beyonce song that keeps, you know, the Single Ladies that keeps coming up again and again. Ed, how did you feel about that, this being an episode that really only has one song, and in the context of the episode, we only hear about 15 seconds of Taking Chances.
We heard two songs.
We heard a verse of Tonight. That yes. Tina sings.
Yes. I'm not saying it needed to have so few songs, but I don't feel like the lack of music hurt it at all. This was an important, like, here's a plot line episode. So maybe I imagine that they probably had maybe another song or two, like, being thrown around of being sung, but they just decided it either bulked it down or detract away from the main issue or something. So I guess it got cut. I'm disappointed. I hope, like, I know that the DVDs aren't on. I would really appreciate it, Fox, if you could release the extended edition of the episodes. I know there's deleted scenes. Don't tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I know it.
So. Well, we've heard that there are. They say that they cut one. I mean, whether or not they film it, they say that they cut one number from pretty much every episode. They probably aren't filming it, but, you know, I'd still love to know what those numbers are in some context. I don't know. Jennifer, how did you feel about the amount of music in this episode?
You know, it's funny. I didn't notice it as much, I think, just because knowing everything else that's going on and in the story and everything that's going on with the kids being so busy the second time watching it. It didn't jump out at me as odd. I think I'm sure when we watched it the first time and did our show on it the first time, we probably made a mention that there was so few songs in it. But I think now that the stories are substantial and there's so much going on that I missed it, but I didn't need it, I guess, as much.
Yeah, you know, going back, it isn't as shocking how little music is in it. And maybe you make a good point, Ed, is that because it's episode 4, you know, it was mainly just shocking because it was so early, and this is when we were still kind of forming our opinions about the show going forward. So this is also the episode where we get to really get some time with Terry's sister, and I know, Ed, that you love Terry's sister.
Oh, I love Kendra. She better be in this next season.
I hope so. I would love to see her come back. This is the episode where she tells Terry, where Terry says there's a problem with the baby, and Kendra says, "Is it black?" Which, taken out of context of this show, is particularly funny because the actress who plays Terry, Jesselyn Gilsig, on Nip Tuck, got pregnant and claimed that one of the main characters was the father, Christian was the father, and then when the baby was born, it was black.
Spoilers!
So, yeah, so I just totally ruined that second season plotline for you if you're watching Nip Tuck. But so it is funny that this show was not only self-aware of itself, but aware of the actresses within the show. We also got Terry's sister's line, "Dishonesty is food to a marriage."
I will have to remember that.
So Ed, you know, I definitely want to see Terry's sister come back, but what kind of context do you think we'll see her again? I mean, is there a reason for her to come back?
Well, I mean, Terry's back in the, like, as you saw in the preview, Terry was in it. So, I mean, where there's someone creating drama, there's usually an accomplice. And what better accomplice than Kendra?
That is a very good point.
I love you remember her name. I don't think I ever caught that.
So this is off of the TV.com trivia page for this episode. So many teens believed the hot tub myth that Quinn told Finn about how she supposedly got pregnant by him that after the episode aired, there was a note posted on Glee's Facebook page that said, "As a follow-up to last week's episode, Pragers, you cannot get pregnant from a hot tub."
Wow.
I'm glad that was confirmed.
Yeah. I'm frightened that had to be confirmed.
That disturbs. Yeah.
Quinn needs such a convincing argument. She's like, just the perfect temperature for sperm travel.
I think it was her eyelashes that made the perfect argument. Oh, sorry. She uses those as a weapon.
Without a doubt. We do get to visit Sandy's apartment in this episode.
Oh, yes.
Covered in dolls.
Deliciously how normal or whatever she says to all the crazy dolls.
Yep, yes. Totally. I would love to. It would be great to see us go back to that apartment. That makes me laugh. But mainly the main thing people take away from this episode is, of course, Single Ladies and Kurt performing Single Ladies with the football team, and that going on to become kind of a cultural phenomenon. You can find a lot of YouTube videos of football players performing. Yes. With performing Single Ladies. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny that even though it isn't a song performed by the kids, it is, you know, has had such an impact. Ed, I know nothing there. I don't have a question relating to that.
Okay.
But this is also the episode where we get the rest of the Glee Club, where we get Matt and Mark and Puck officially joins the Glee Club in this episode. So, you know, a lot happens that sets the stage going forward for Preggers.
This is also near the end of what I like to call the diva era of Rachel. She has her diva moments, but this is kind of ending it soon. It's like winding down.
Well, I think that comes up a lot in the next episode, and the road.
It comes a bit more, but it's like, well, I feel like we'll never get the diva that Rachel was always meant to be. Like, I feel like it's dead.
Well, one other thing from TV.com that I thought was kind of funny. Rachel says that she feels a special connection to Natalie Wood in the role of Maria in West Side Story. This is when Mr. Schuster gives the lead vocal in Tonight to Tina, which is a song from West Side Story. Rachel says she has a special connection to Natalie Wood in the role of Maria in West Side Story, but all of Wood's singing for the film was actually dubbed over by Marnie Nixon.
Yeah. Well, and that was the other thing that I didn't get. I mean, and plus she was... You know, I'm not sure what her ethnicity is, but she's certainly not Puerto Rican, but she was playing a Puerto Rican in the film.
Yeah.
So there were like so many levels to that joke that I don't think sunk in the first time we saw it.
That's a good point. I mean, yeah, she's playing a Puerto Rican character, but she's not Puerto Rican. There's, really nobody was in that movie. Most of them were Greek. Mm. But Natalie Wood not having the most delightful end to her career is also an interesting interesting person to liken you to. Yeah, liken yourself to. I think that's pretty much it. There's pretty much all I have for Preggers. Ed, do you have anything else for episode 4 before we move on to The Road's Not Taken?
I sent out on Twitter a little bit earlier today asking people for their favorite moments, and Beaver Fever 87 said his favorite moment was, "Hi, I'm Kurt, and I'll be auditioning for the role of Kicker." And yes. Innes Michaela 84, when Puck told Quinn, well, maybe this was this episode or the next one, "We'll call the Vatican. We got ourselves another Immaculate Conception."
Yes.
Which reminds me that there's a picture that's kind of floating around. It's a picture of Mary. And it says abstinence 99.999% effective.
Nice.
I raffle.
And Bieber Fever's name is Megan. So
what up, Meg?
Yes, thank you. Megan has emailed us many times, as many people have. So thank you for that. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about The Road's Not Taken. Of course, we have the new iTunes is driving me crazy. Of course, we have.
How do you like the new iTunes?
Kristen Chenoweth was in this episode making her Glee debut, and let's go ahead and take a listen to her big number from this show, of course, Maybe This Time, that she performs a little bit with Lea Michele in a duet. So here's a bit of that.
Maybe this time I'll be lucky. Maybe this time he'll stay. Maybe this time, for the first time, love won't hurry away. He will hold me fast. I'll be home at last. Not a loser any more like the last time and the time before. Everybody loves a winner.
That song is, of course, from Cabaret, and Kristen Chenoweth actually won the Satellite Awards Special Achievement Award for Outstanding Guest Star for her performance in this episode. But, Ed, I think you mentioned you're not as big of a fan of Kristen.
No, not like you two.
Well, so tell us why. What doesn't she do for you?
Well, I mean, she's... I just... I'm just not that into musical theater as much as... I mean, I never saw Wicked, which I regret. I should have saw it. And I don't know, she's good. She's a good husky-ish quality to her voice. Maybe that's the wrong word. But it's like smoky. I don't know.
Well, she does. She has a lot of musical theater in her style, and that's actually the one complaint I have about her in this episode is every single song that she performs, you never really feel like you're listening to Kristen Chenoweth. You kind of feel like Kristen Chenoweth is playing a character. Like right here, she's obviously putting on that kind of Liza Minnelli quality to her voice. She's kind of singing it with a bit of a New York accent, which isn't, you know, she doesn't speak with, which is in contrast to when she's singing alone with Matthew Morrison, and then she kind of sings it a little rockier. You know, she definitely turns on the style, for each song. And part of Glee is more that, you know, to me, part of the songs in Glee is them just singing them straight ahead, just singing them pure. So I do find, I am a little disappointed by that. I'll definitely give you that. She turns the musical theater on a little bit too much in this one. I don't know, Jennifer, but you like Kristen Chenoweth, right?
I do very much so. And yeah, I mean, I guess I never really made that connection that she's kind of creating a new voice or personality for the song and not just singing as herself. Whereas, yeah, you're right. Everybody else sings as themselves and they match the songs to them.
Yeah.
As opposed to matching them to the song. So... But I still like her.
Yeah.
I think she's adorable.
I like her a lot. I actually like her a lot better on subsequent viewings. The first time we went through this episode, you know, I really liked Kristen Chenoweth, but I didn't particularly like her on Glee.
You didn't like this character at all.
I didn't like
that.
Yeah. And watching back to it, I actually like it a lot more. You know, I kind of get the joke a bit more. And, you know, again, my complaint is always when you take the focus off the kids, I get a little bored. But, watching back to things, I have a little more patience. You know, I know that the focus will come back to the kids eventually. So I have a little more patience with characters like April Rhodes. So, you know, yeah, I enjoyed this more the second time through. This is one of the episodes that I actually got a much bigger kick out of subsequent viewings. I don't know. Ed, do you pretty much have the same opinion of these episodes on second viewings as you do on the first?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. It's actually, when I'm rewatching them, I'm always just constantly surprised at how much they fit in. And how, like I think Jen said this last week, how, like, in our minds, we have the storyline spread out, like, at a natural-er pace. When in actuality, it's like, boom, boom, bang.
Yeah. That's a good point. Jennifer, did you have a different experience watching things through the second time?
For this episode, no. No, I there were definitely, I think episode two, I felt different. And episode one, I think I was just happy to see it again. But in this particular episode, no, because I enjoyed it. I remember being a little surprised that you kind of had a negative reaction to this episode before. But
I definitely liked it better this time.
Good.
We also get to hear a couple of interesting things. You know, we get to hear Don't Stop Believin' sung by Quinn in this episode.
Okay. I love that. It took me forever to hunt down YouTube of her version. I mean, I don't know if I love it, but I love the difference. I don't know.
It is. It's very different. And, you know, that's worth mentioning that her performing the song is so much different. And, it gives you a sense of, like, they keep talking about how we're nothing without Rachel. We're nothing without Rachel. And hearing Quinn perform it, it does give you a sense of, like, well, you know, you do get to see, her value, you know, in that version. Let me see if I can pull it up here. It's good. It's just, it doesn't quite have, you know, the body and the soul that, that Lea Michele brings to the performance.
Yeah, it's probably why she didn't finish it. But and it is, it's interesting because all of her other songs, we kind of talked about this before, are usually very, from a more innocent time, you know, she usually kind of does the more...
The Quinn songs,
the
you
Quinn
mean?
Songs, yeah. Yeah, they're... She definitely has this theme about her, kind of in like early 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, music. Definitely. Yeah. It's funny to hear that. It would be interesting to hear other songs performed by different members of the group. You know, hearing more from the characters. That would be.
If this show lasts forever,
it will. It's totally, never going to
totally
go.
Do an episode where they like mix up. Who sang what song?
Now, there's a totally throwaway line in this episode that I didn't catch until rewatching it. In this episode, Emma tells a story of when she reconnected with a high school boyfriend on Facebook. And she said she went and had lunch with Andy and things didn't work out. She broke it off again. And a few weeks later, Johnny Versace died. Now, it's a total throwaway line, but I looked it up, and essentially, the joke is that Emma dated Andrew Cunanan in high school.
That's dark.
Ed, do you
That's
know...
That's borderline sick.
Did you get this reference? Do you know anything about this reference?
I don't even know what you're talking about right now.
So, Johnny Versace, right? The clothing designer, incredible clothing, world famous clothing designer. He was assassinated, or I don't know if assassinated because he's not political, but he was murdered by Andrew Cunanan. Andrew Cunanan went on a killing spree and killed 5 people, including Johnny Versace, during a 3-month period in 1997. And it's a horribly sad story, and you know you can find all the information on the internet. But Emma tells the story of dating a guy she calls Andy on, you know, in high school, and then reconnecting with him on Facebook, and they split up, and then a few weeks later, Johnny Versace's dead. It's a really dark reference. I mean,
very, very dark. Wow.
So, I was looking on like the TV.com. The trivia doesn't mention it anywhere. I mean, it certainly doesn't come up anywhere else, but it's pretty dark. So you can go ahead and find that. If you want to take that as canon within the show, it also teaches us that, it also teaches us that Emma went to high school in La Jolla, which is a neighborhood of San Diego, California, and that she's probably about 27. So,
nice.
She's probably about 37, according to the timeline. I mean, if she actually dated Andrew Cunanan.
Okay.
So that's a really dark reference. I just thought I'd bring that up.
Wow.
We also get the bowling scene in this episode. That's when they perform Alone. And, that's where they also, we get to see Finn and Rachel bowling. Now I'm going to throw this out to you, Jennifer. As soon as Glee did a bowling scene, what did you think of?
Grease 2.
Grease 2.
It's horrible.
Exactly, Grease 2.
But that's one of my guilty pleasures. So.
Ed, have you seen Grease 2?
I have seen Grease 1, but I can't say that I've seen Grease 2.
They're completely different films.
I don't like Grease 1, but I can watch Grease 1. Grease 2 is unbearable. It's a horrible piece of work. But it does star Michelle Pfeiffer singing and dancing. In Grease 2, they do a huge dance number in a bowling alley. And it's not even shot. Like, there's really no direct reference in the episode to Grease 2. But if you're a listener and you had the same connection, you know, seeing Glee go to a bowling alley and then thinking of Grease 2, let us know, because that was immediate. I could only think that they were making some kind of a jump there. This is also the episode where we get the full Silkwood. One of my favorite jokes in the entire show.
That's a good one.
And, of course, we get Somebody to Love, and some other great music came out of this one. But in the end, you know, this is really the first time we had a guest star come in and kind of take over an entire episode. And personally, it really bothered me the first time I saw it, but it didn't really bother me going forward. You know, it's, mm-hmm. I warmed up to the idea. So, I don't know. What do you guys think about The Road's Not Taken? Ed, anything real special about this episode you want to mention?
I like the I'm Sorry Cookies. That was pretty sweet.
I think that's in Preggers, actually.
Maybe that's Acapellas. Maybe I'm just Oh, that's
in Acapellas. Yeah, that's
Oh, my God, I'm terrible. Anything that involves Sue and Sandy Ryerson, like, conniving is always a good time.
That's a good point. We also have Sandy Ryerson kind of torturing Rachel. Like, she gets the role
when,
in
When you
cabaret.
Want to write yourself in as Queen Cleopatra or something. Yes. Into cabaret, which totally doesn't make any sense. But whatever.
And we have the guy who writes for the school newspaper and keeps his blog trying to get Rachel to show him her bra. Or actually take off her bra so that she'll get a good review in the paper. It's interesting. There's not that, I mean, in the broad scheme of the season, The Road's Not Taken doesn't really factor in that greatly because it really has to do with Rachel in Cabaret and it has to do with April Rhodes, and April Rhodes didn't last and Rachel in Cabaret only lasted about one episode. So in the broad scheme of things, it isn't a very significant plot device, this whole piece. So that's pretty much.
Wait, you get talking about like plot device like we're writers or something.
Gleeful's
gonna turn into a writer's show dissecting Glee's plot lines. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, honestly, I think that's why Gleeful is special. Like, of all the Glee podcasts I've listened to, I think that's why Gleeful special is, because I have kind of the writer's background and bring that opinion to the table. Jennifer has, you know, the fan, but really, you know, informed about a lot of the songs the first time they were recorded. And then Ed, you bring the modern opinion and the young modern opinion. I mean, I think that's why it's awesome.
The modern kids.
Wow.
Between you guys, you know every single song that is performed on this show, and that's pretty awesome.
I've never been called old so nicely in my life.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was trying to pay you all a compliment.
I know.
Ed, would you like to thank some iTunes reviewers?
Yes. Podcast Addictee, thank you for reviewing us. That was it. Our reviewing streak isn't too high, but
okay.
I figure a lot of people have reviewed. We are on 23 pages of reviews, so
yes, you know that's awesome. Please review us on iTunes if you haven't yet. That always helps a lot. You can send us an email at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. And a couple emailers we wanted to thank. Listener Scott and I had a very interesting conversation about television in the UK. So thank you very much for that. And he said that while we discussed Don't Stop Believing, the TV show, we discussed that last time, he cited it as being a very low-budget show by UK standards.
Wow.
Which I thought is kind of insane, because by American standards, that show is incredibly high budget.
Yeah.
So, I want to thank all the people that listened, that emailed in, listener Jonathan emails us all the time, so that's really friendly of him, really nice of him. And that's pretty much it. You can check out the website, which is www.gleefulpodcast.com, and the Facebook fan page, where you can become a fan of the show. I think next week we're going to discuss Rachel and Finn, a little Leah Michelle and Corey Monteith. There's going to be a lot more to discuss on the former than the latter, but that should be fun. And anything else? Jennifer, you got anything else?
No, I'm good.
Ed, anything else?
Just enjoying life. Oh, shout out to she was on the show like last year. She was Nicole. She's getting married this weekend, so I'm going to be doing that. I'm going to be going to that wedding. So
congratulations!
Congratulations to
Nicole.
Yay!
We did get an email from listener Emily, and the title and the subject line was "Ed is the bomb." So
I need to start reading. My peanut gallery isn't. I need one following me around the class every so often. That'd be sweet.
For the honor of you, it's Josh Jen, and I'm Josh.
I'm Jen.
Peace out, Om Glee, jazz hands.
Good night, everyone.
Night. Somebody to love.